My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
That was a shooting gallery up there.
I could hear the trembling in his voice.
She suffered a fairly severe beating. The video is pretty graphic.
Justice for us seems almost impossible.
It's not fun to watch somebody die, and they knew she was in mortal peril.
They have not asked the hard questions. Why was the Capitol intentionally unsecure that day?
The FBI had information about security concerns before January 6th.
They're out for blood, and they're getting it. They appear to be winning.
Were the actions of the Capitol Police out of line? Were there violations in use of force?
Now I describe it as an inside job.
I'm ready to do whatever God calls me.
There's an old Chinese saying my ancestors learned before the Communist Party took over our country. The family is the essential unit of human society, and that you must have honor and defend your family. But it's not always easy to do.
When the regime gives the order, you have to kill.
My heart was pounding. I felt my body bouncing and twisting on the floor. They put numbers on our shoulders, then separated us into rows of even and odd numbers. I was number 9. My brother, he's still in prison. And my sister, she was sent to a labor camp without a trial. But there's one piece of evidence they haven't been able to destroy yet. I left everything behind. If I can't expose what they did to us, then all of our suffering would be for nothing.
Welcome to Chosen Generation with your host, Pastor Greg Young.
But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should shew forth the praises of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy.
And now, Chosen Generation, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. And now, here's your host, Pastor Greg.
And welcome to the program. Great to have you with me. Thanks so much for being here. Let's see. There we go. Thanks so much for being here. I know you have a choice on where you can listen each and every day. And I thank you for keeping it tuned here to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses. Got a great program lined up for you today. Matt Long and I are going to get into a conversation. What is it to be a conservative? There's a lot of conversation to have with regards to that topic. We'll talk about it bottom of next hour. Ken Thornburg is with me, and we'll be having our spiritual warfare conversation this week. Last time he was with us, we took on territorial spirits and put canopies of protection. We'll talk a bit about spiritual warfare. What is it, and why do we need to be engaged in it right now in particular? And Elon Srulevich is going to be with me at the bottom of the hour. There's a war on our children. They're after our kids. And we need to step up. It needs to stop. It needs to end. That's one of the few times where Jesus says, I'm going to hang a millstone around their neck. And I don't want one of those. I don't think you do either. And we need to make sure that our kids are protected. All right. Well, I'm very pleased to welcome my next guest to the program. I was just telling him, so at Value Voters Summit and at CPAC, on a number of occasions, I was told, oh, you've got to meet Bishop Jackson. And I think twice I got over to where he had been and he had just left for another engagement. So I'm really, really pleased to have the opportunity to have him join me here live on the program this morning. I want to welcome Bishop E.W. Jackson to the program. Bishop, welcome. Good to have you with me.
Pastor Gray, after a long period of time missing each other, I'm glad we finally connected. So thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. I'm thinking it was Bill Federer, actually. You know Bill?
Yeah, a good, very, very dear friend.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yep. So Bill was one of the people who rushed me over to your table at one point in one of the gatherings that we were at. And your assistant said, he just got in. We just sent him in the car. He's on his way to the airport. It's like, man, the guy is going a million miles an hour, and it hasn't stopped. You've made a declaration. You're running for the 47th president of the United States.
Yes, sir, I am. It's one of the most fateful decisions I've ever made in my life. I didn't make it lightly. I really felt the call of God to do this. And it, frankly, it's because I love the Lord. I'm committed to being obedient to him. And because I love this country, because I really believe that America is a gift from Almighty God. And we as Christians in particular are charged to be stewards and preservers of this great gift.
So you've kind of given an overview in light of the field and all the different candidates that are there. Now, are you going to be on the debate stage Wednesday night?
I am not going to make it on the debate stage. Only 8 candidates will. We're going to shoot for the next debate.
Okay.
Which is going to be the September the 27th. Okay. So we want to be there. We've got a couple of hurdles that we're dealing with right now. I've told people, I think I'm kind of a mini Trump in a sense that they don't want to hear my voice. They don't want to hear a God-centered voice in this campaign at all. I've heard it from Republican establishment people throughout my career. I've even heard it in professional broadcasting when I've done secular radio. Don't bring up God. Don't mention God. People don't want to hear that.
Yep.
So I'm kind of the candidate who is going to bring up God. I believe we'll get the platform that we need when the time is right.
Well, you know, Bishop, as a Christian pastor, and I've run into the same thing. I mean, my show, I believe, has been blackballed in certain markets, even in Christian markets. And one of the reasons for that is that I'm taking a very firm stand when it comes to marriage, when it comes to this LGBTQ agenda. Yeah. I don't hate. But I believe that it's sin, and I believe more importantly than that, I mean, which is critical, but that it is destructive to our nation because it's destructive to the family.
Yeah, look, I don't say this, again, with any pride or ego. I am the most conservative candidate in this race, including everybody, because I propose a constitutional amendment that defines marriage as a union between one man and one woman. I think we need to come back and have the fundamental debate. Did we do a good thing with Obergefell? Has the country benefited? I think it's thrown the country into complete moral turmoil, where you've got people telling children at the age of 3 years old, well, you know, you're not the identity that you're the doctor assigned. He was just guessing. And we're going to help you find who you really are. I mean, this stuff has become insane. So I propose a constitutional amendment that ends that debate. I propose a constitutional amendment that defines gender as only two, male and man, female, so that we forever end this gender-bending insanity that is going on in the country as well. I haven't heard any other candidates propose that, but I do.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, and I want to let you answer this. I hear people all the time, and they'll say, well, you can't legislate morality. So let's answer that question, would you please?
You know, I'm a graduate of Harvard Law School, and I practiced law for many years. And there are a lot of things that Harvard tried to unteach me that I was unwilling to unlearn. I was saved while I was in law school. Harvard Law School certainly didn't save me, but I got saved. And that was when I realized they weren't simply trying to educate you. They were trying to give you a particular perspective on life and on morality. And one of the things I realized is all legislation is a reflection of a moral worldview. All of it. You pass a law, it is because somebody believes that this is good or right or fair. You change a law because somebody believes that it wasn't good or right or fair. And so this idea you can't legislate morality, that's what legislation is. That's what the legal system is. The question is, whose worldview? What worldview does it represent? And that's where we must, as Christians, must make sure that our legal system represents a Judeo-Christian worldview, because that's what our founding fathers intended, and that's what's made us the greatest nation in the history of mankind.
Isn't it also a fact that if we change that definition, if we move away from that, then we now have also, you know, a lot of people argue that John Locke, they say, well, you know, John Locke is who they followed. But I argue that John Locke isn't who they followed. In fact, quite to the contrary, because John Locke suggested that there's two hands held out to us, one hand it being God's and one hand being man's. My argument is no, God didn't hold a hand out. God endowed. God put in us life. God put in us liberty. God put in us godliness and life and everything we need in order to have abundance. And God gave us a desire to be advancers of his kingdom.
You know, the interesting thing, Pastor Greg, is even Thomas Jefferson and Ben Franklin, the two most prominent founding fathers that people argue were not what we would call orthodox Christians, but even they subscribe to that worldview. I mean, Ben Franklin stood up in the Constitutional Convention and said, a sparrow can't fall from the sky without his notice. An empire can't rise without his aid. And without his concurring help, we won't be any more successful than they were in building the Tower of Babel. And that's the guy that they say wasn't a Christian. So clearly, that's the cultural milieu in which our country was born. And I believe that's been the cause. Look, we're not perfect people. We've never been perfect. We never will be. Why does 4.25% of the world's population become the wealthiest, the most powerful, the most prosperous, the most free nation in the history of mankind? They must be doing something right. And I believe what we've done right is that we understood that liberty and rights come from Almighty God, and we are all ultimately accountable to him.
And then government flows from that. Yes. Through the people to representation, not authoritarianism.
The consent of the governed, right? And by the way, this idea, people keep saying, our democracy. But the founding fathers were very explicit that we were not to be a democracy, but a constitutional republic. Because that code language is used to say that once I'm in power, I can do whatever I want to do. Well, the Constitution says, no, you can't, because there are higher laws to which you answer, and therefore you cannot take away inherent rights given by God without due process of law. And you can't make up rights that God never endowed in order to restrict other people. Like, for example, I just read an article just recently about how a librarian shut down a speaker because she was misgendering by referring to biological males and biological females. He actually stopped her talk. Because you're misgendering, you will not be allowed to continue. That's not freedom. That's totalitarianism.
And I think that, you know, a lot of folks are not understanding the dangers that are associated and how foundational it is when they're cracking. Marxism requires a complete and utter destruction of a country's foundation in order for it to take over. Total chaos has to be ruling and reigning in the streets.
There's nothing more ironic to me than hearing Patrice Cullors, who claims to be kind of a liberator of black people, say, of course, one of the founders of Black Lives Matter, say, I'm a trained Marxist. Marxism is a slave system. It turns everyone in the society into slaves. You are slaves to the state. Your children belong to the state. You belong to the state. I mean, it is pure evil. And yet these are the people who run around talking about the slavery that ended 150 years ago as if I'm a slave and you're an oppressor and everybody's defined by that. And yet they want to impose a system that is absolutely evil. And China's doing it. North Korea's doing it. The people who live in these countries know that their lives are at the behest of the state. And if the state says you die, you die. If the state says we're taking your business away, it's gone. I mean, if the state says we're going to put you in prison because we don't like the views you hold. I mean, right. There is no liberty, no human dignity whatsoever. And yet that's what these people want to impose upon us. And we're not having it.
Well, the government shutdown that they did with the whole vax and with COVID. I mean, we experienced martial law in America. No one will come out and say it, but that's exactly what they did. And they succeeded in doing it by using the one thing that, as a Christian, we know God has not given us, and that is a spirit of fear.
You know, Pastor Greg, I always say crisis reveals character. And I say all the little petty tyrants came out during the crisis and showed what they really want. What they really want is absolute control over everything and everybody. Oh, you're going to church? We're going to fine you. We will arrest you. Oh, you're going outside after curfew? You're not allowed to do that. You stay in your house until we tell you you can come out. Oh, you better take this shot or you're going to lose your job. I mean, on and on and on it went. Look, I'm a pastor, as you know. I had the police call me because I went on live stream to say, I'm not closing my church under any circumstances.
Amen.
I had the police call me and say, we understand you made public statements that you're closing your church. You know, you're not closing your church. You know, it's the law. I said, when the governor says do something, that doesn't make it a law. I said, as far as I'm concerned, that's just a suggestion. Because laws are made in a certain way in our country. They said, well, is there anything we can say to persuade you to close? I said, no, we're going to be open. And you know what? They left us alone. But you're right. So many people, yeah. Americans have been so miseducated that we don't understand our constitutional republic, that it's not the law because the governor says, this is what I want you to do. He's just a citizen like the rest of us. He can have his opinion, but he doesn't get to order us around because we don't work for him. We don't work for the president. We have, in fact, the people are the boss of the nation. We are the sovereigns of the nation, and we answer to God.
Let's talk about that for just a second, because there are a lot of preachers that go on the rant of Romans 13, and they say, well, we're supposed to be submitted and so on. Now, the way I understand this is that, number one, we're not living in Rome, okay? That was written to a people who actually lived under an authoritarian. And so they were being counseled as to how to address being in that position. We're in America, the sovereigns. And of course, you know, go back to Bill Clinton, right? And he said, these people who declare themselves to be sovereigns, they're enemies of the state. Let's go kill their wives. I mean, that's what they did to Randy Weaver's wife.
Yep. Look at the behavior of the apostles to examine the true meaning of that text. When the jailers in Philippi told Paul to go, He said, when the governing powers told him to leave, he said, no, I'm not leaving. I'm staying right here. You come get me. And when Herod sent for Jesus, Jesus said, you tell that fox that I minister today and tomorrow, and on the third day, I shall be made whole. But he didn't obey him, because we're not required. We are required. It's very simple. We obey God first. And when the powers that be, when the laws of the land conflict with the truth of God's word, we must obey God, not man. So, I mean, to me, it's a very simple matter. But, you know, frankly, it's a cloak for cowardice, because people are afraid and they simply don't want the confrontation. So I would refer them to the book of Revelations that said, you know, cowards shall be thrown into the lake of fire along with other abominable people. You don't want to be a coward when you're claiming that God is your sovereign and you are answerable ultimately to him.
Well, and that's one of the reasons they don't want you on that stage.
Well, you know, look, I'm getting a lot of pushback, but look, Pastor Glenn, I'm not backing down. I'm not going anywhere. So they're going to have to deal with me. And I think the American people, and particularly the Christian community, everywhere I've gone, Christians, I'm so glad you're running. I'm so glad there's a clear voice of godliness in this race. And so I know God has called me to this, and I'm going to keep going.
My friend and I had a conversation last night, because there's a whole lot of these, you know, prophet people that are out there, especially they did this in 2020. And I do believe that the election was stolen. I believe it's clear. It's crystal clear. The evidence is there's a preponderance of evidence. But that being set aside, that say that Donald John Trump is God's man for the job. How do you, as a Christian minister and now running as a candidate, how do you interpret that, or how do you respond to those comments?
Well, first of all, I believe that every election is not about who is the most virtuous person or necessarily the most capable person, but who is right for that particular moment. Okay, God has a moment in every circumstance, and he has a choice for that moment. And that person may not be the right person for another moment. Huh. I really believe that in 2016, Donald Trump really was that person. And frankly, to my surprise, because I supported Ted Cruz.
I did too.
Donald Trump was the guy. Is he the guy now? I'll tell you what I'm hearing as I travel the country. People know him. They respect him. They respect what he's done for the country. But I hear a lot of people saying, but, you know, it really is time for new leadership. It really is time for someone else. 62% of Republicans apparently say either they will not vote for Donald Trump, or they will vote for him, but they're looking for someone else. So I think this is a different moment than 2016 was. That's all I can say about it. I mean, I think we do owe him a debt of gratitude. He did a tremendous job serving our country in 2016. It wasn't perfect, of course, but it was a whole lot better than it's been in a long, long time. The question is, who is the best person for 2024?
How do you, because one of the stumbling blocks that I believe that President Trump had, and I think, you know, Peter Navarro's written about this, I think he's identified it for himself, is, you know, he tried to extend olive branches to the political establishment. He attempted to try to work with those that he thought would work with him from a businessman's perspective. And obviously we know they burned him on every front. And he was literally on an island trying to govern us back to we the people, which I think he did amazingly well, considering all the opposition. How do you combat that? Because you're not a politician per se. You are coming at this from an outside perspective. How do you avoid those pitfalls?
I think you've got to have a clear standard. And you know, I one of the clear standards enunciated in Scripture is in Exodus 18:21, and it says, Jethro advising Moses, Choose men who fear God, men of truth, who hate covetousness, and are capable. And look, I think if you have that kind of standard, you simply don't gather around you people, for example, who don't fear God. Mm-hmm. You don't compromise. Look, we've got some homosexuals who are conservative, and I probably agree with them 90% of the time. But for me, if your lifestyle is in fundamental rebellion against Almighty God, I can't count on your wisdom. I simply can't.
Yeah.
Because you're in fundamental rebellion against him in the way you live. So in other words, you're either saying that God is a liar and the Bible is a lie and the church is lying and pastors are lying and I'm right. Or you're saying maybe there is no God and I can do whatever I want to do. Either way, I don't see you meeting that standard. I think if you set those kinds of standards from the very beginning and you look for those kinds of people, I think you're going to have a lot less of the missteps that we had than what we had with President Trump. Some of his appointments ended up being disastrous. I mean, yes. I said on day one, Christopher Wray is gone. I mean, he's gone.
Yep.
And look, I want to put Fauci in jail. I really believe that Anthony Fauci has committed crimes against humanity. I really believe that.
Yep.
But here again, who's Anthony Fauci's God? Anthony Fauci.
Yep. Well, let me throw something else at you regarding the home, because Dennis Prager came out during Pride Month and made a statement about decent people and indecent people and suggested that being homosexual, you can be a decent person. Decency, the definition of decent, is moral. And here becomes the issue. If the arbiter of that question is man, then we have already lost the battle. Because either our rights and our freedom and our liberty is coming from God and is inalienable. In other words, cannot be challenged by anything or anyone because God has endowed it in us and given it to us. Or it's something that can be questioned and it can be controlled subjectively by humans. And so if homosexuality is accepted as okay, that is an arbitrary decision that is subjective to man, and subsequently now you've thrown out your right to claim that you are under liberty because of God.
So then why isn't genital and surgical mutilation of children okay? Because they've decided that with the counsel of their teachers or whomever, that they're in the wrong body and they've got to alter it. Why isn't that okay?
Right.
I mean, they're not. I mean, see, look, I said this from the very beginning of this whole sexual orientation concept. Once you remove the standards that God sets, well, then what are the standards then?
There are
none.
And
who makes them?
Yep.
And you're right. You just then make them up as you go along.
Yep.
When was the last time you heard any politician say, homosexuality is sin? I don't hate the homosexual, but it's sin. The Bible says it's sin. And I can never, ever sanction it or go along with it or somehow paper over it and say, well, yeah, but, you know, they've been together for a long time and they're really nice people. That's not the issue.
It's destructive also to our liberties. At the end of the day, it is destructive because it destroys the very core of where our liberties begin. And without that core, we have none. Charlie Kirk came to that conclusion. He used to be libertarian. He used to support same-sex marriage. He's changed his position because of the fact that he came to the revelation that if he stood on that, then he couldn't stand on God. And America can only stand if America stands on God. Bishop, we're out of time, but I'm so thankful for you being with me today. Brother, you're hitting home runs as far as I can see. E.W. Jackson for president.com. E.W. Jackson, spell out for F-O-R, president.com. You can see it on the screen underneath Bishop's name right there. E.W. Jackson for president.com. Check out his platform. Check out his policies. You've heard him. What we've talked about are the toughest things he'll be challenged on on the trail, and he's I mean, in this pastor's opinion, he's nailed every one of them. Bishop, thanks for being with me today. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, brother. God bless you.
God bless you. We're going to take a break. Elon Sorlovic will be with us, and we'll talk some more about this assault on our children. The health minister, whatever you want to call him, is suggesting that children need to be changed. 4, 5 years old. Let's just start giving them pills and cutting things off. This is sick. It's disgusting. It's perversion. And it is a war on kids. I'll be back. We'll talk more about it coming up right after this brief break.
All right.
So up next, we have ClanSlate. When you have different things like cancer and different diseases that are autoimmune related, it can really help with inflammation because you're helping clean the body. And ClanSlate is a formula that's made from a natural ortho-silic acid that basically is put into a formulation that's naturally occurring that uses different processes from polarization to heating to cooling to different types of catalysts, which will go in the body and really help communicate to get rid of those things that don't need to be there. People don't understand why there's so many autoimmune disorders, but our environment's toxic. The land, air, and water have changed. We've been exposed to nuclear war, and the issue is if there's a nuclear bomb or there's pollution or there's war in one country, it actually affects everything up to the stratosphere. So we're all connected, and we've really got to clean things out.
You can pick up your clean slate today at cgrforlife.com. That's cgrforlife.com. Pick up your clean slate today.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, CEO of MyPillow. Retailers, shopping channels, and now even banks have tried to cancel myself and MyPillow. Well, during these times, your support has meant everything to us. So my employees and I want to personally thank each and every one of you by passing the savings directly on to you. We're selling the best products ever for the best prices ever. For example, we have my standard size MyPillow, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98 with your promo code. Or you can get custom fit with my premium queen size MyPillows, regularly $79.98, now just $29.98. Or my king size, regular $89.98, now just $34.98. So go to MyPillow.com now and use the promo code on your screen, or call the 1-800 number below to receive this exclusive offer. If you do it right now, I'm going to include a free gift with your purchase. Thank you and God bless.
Hi, I'm Tim Sheff, a certified natural health practitioner of over 40 years. I want to introduce you to a product that changed my life. The product's called Vibe, available at cgrwellness.com. I thought I was on a good nutritional program before I discovered Vibe. I was taking the traditional vitamin and mineral tablets, wasn't really feeling any different. So I tried Vibe. Vibe is an all-in-one vitamin and mineral supplement. It's a liquid multivitamin. It's cold-pressed, whole-food sourced, non-radiated, gluten-free, and has no pasteurization. Vibe is like fresh juicing without all the work. It supports four areas of the body: cardiovascular health, immune health, anti-aging, and healthy cell replication. Vibe is available in a 32-ounce bottle for home use or a very handy 1-ounce travel packet for life on the go. The first time I tried Vibe, I had more energy in about 20 minutes. I started thinking clear, even believe I slept better. Get yours today at cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio at checkout and receive $20 off your first order of $50 or more. That's cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio. Get yours today.
These statements have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Neither products do not treat, reduce, cure, or prevent disease.
My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for in World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
You can support Chosen Generation and make a tax-deductible donation by visiting www.chosengenerationradio.com. And now, back to Chosen Generation with Pastor Greg.
And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses. And punch that button, and there we go. We'll start that record over there. And I'm really pleased to have back on the program Elon Sorlovic. And he is the owner of E-Guard watches. You can pick up a great watch. I'm saving my dollars and my pennies, but I'm gonna, those just look like the coolest watches in the world, I gotta tell you. But he also has been a very strong voice for conservative values, really having come over from a more liberal background initially, or at least coming out of a liberal background in Hollywood. And I want to welcome Elon to the program. Elon, welcome. Good to have you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And traveling the world. So what time is it where you are right now?
2:35 p.m.
Okay. Okay. Not too bad. Not too bad.
Perfect.
Yeah.
After,
yeah. There you go. There you go. All right. Well, my goodness. So they're just all over this thing. Now we've got the assistant health secretary is pushing sex changes on children.
That Rachel Levine there or whatever, the transgender health minister.
What is his name? That's not his name, but I'll look it up here in a minute. But yeah, Mr. Levine is you know, back at it once again, and what's frustrating to me, what's angering to me, is that they're targeting kids.
I mean, that's the consistent through line in all of this. It's always toward kids. That's the thing that's so odd to me, because it wouldn't be hard to have the population more complacent about saying, hey, listen, I'm an adult. I just want to do what I want to do with my body. If I want to go have a sex change, that's all I'm asking for. I'm asking to just not be targeted for that. That's an easy request. But what they're saying is, no, no, no. You're a 12-year-old or an 11-year-old, and we've kind of indoctrinated you into believing that your only value in life is by assuming this new identity, and we're going to mutilate your body in the process, and we're going to cause changes that you can never go back on. You're not old enough to get a tattoo. You're not old enough to smoke cigarettes. You're not old enough to consent to any type of sexual relations, but you're old enough to choose your biological sex and undergo serious, dangerous, life-altering surgery and go on hormone blockers that you can never recover from. That's where we're at.
I had a guest on, I believe it was yesterday, and he's got a 5-year-old, and the first question that they were asked first day of school is, how do you want to be referred to?
In Florida, they've made that illegal.
And thankfully, I mean, that's a good thing that they have. I would suggest they haven't gone far enough, though, because in Florida, they said from 4-year-old to 9-year-old, you can't ask that question. Okay, but at 10 years old, you can. See, to me, I mean, look, you know, we did it here in Texas where you can't push that till they're 18. I still think that there's a concern with that, because you still give those that are pushing this agenda an opportunity to groom them in high school, so that as soon as they turn 18, they can start. And 18, I get it. Yes, you can go into the military. There's a lot of things you can do at 18 years of age. I understand that is considered quasi-adulthood. But at 18 years of age, when you talk to these detransitioners who are now in their early 20s, who in some cases were 16, 17, and 18 when they changed, and now 4, 5, 6 years later in their mid-20s, they're like, oh my God, why didn't somebody tell me that this is not the answer?
Yeah, it's so odd to me that with any medical procedure, I mean, this has kind of taken a turn on its head since COVID, but I used to believe that with any medical procedure, you have to have some kind of informed consent, that you understood what you're undergoing and the long-term consequences of it. I mean, now it seems like ideology has overtaken that. It no longer matters if you have informed consent or not. If it suits the interest of that political ideology, they will just push it. again, we saw during COVID, we're seeing with the trans movement, it doesn't matter who it damages, it doesn't matter what the long-term ramifications are. Actually, the same tactics are used in both: censorship, attack, vilify, and that's pretty much, and then outcast. You're not allowed to go into this place, you're not allowed to, and you do see that with the trans movement as well. If you are an athlete and you go against a male competing in your category, if you're a woman, and just decimating world records, if you speak up against that, you're the bad guy. You will be vilified. You will be outcast. You will no longer be allowed to compete.
Yeah.
And you have to stand there and smile and cheer it on. Again, with kids, I find it very interesting that they're going after kids. That's the most evil thing you can do, and that's what they're going after. And then they've managed to convince a percentage of the population that not only is this okay to do, it is the morally just thing to do. And if you can invert morals and ethics, again, we talk about the denial of God. It wouldn't be just the denial of morals and ethics. It would be the absolute inversion of them. It would be to feel just in doing something terrible. And I think that's what we're seeing. So it's pretty scary.
There's a certain test that women are able to take now. Angelina Jolie was one of the first, you know, that I think really highlighted that, right? You know, where women can test to find out if they have, a high percentage chance of getting breast cancer. And under those conditions, women will then potentially opt for a mastectomy or a double mastectomy in the case of Angelina Jolie. But my understanding is that even when you're going through that process, that there are mandatory waiting periods before you have that surgery so that you have time to really process all the pros and the cons and really make an informed decision. And they don't do that with these kids.
Nope. Because they don't care. In the end of the day, it's about two things. It's about deconstructing, it's about money, and then it's also about deconstructing society. You know, when we're looking at things like cancer, of course, you have to make a decision. Your life is on the line. And they try and make that same argument. That's the interesting thing. This is how perverted the argument has become. They try and say, well, my kid will kill themselves if they don't have this surgery. It's like cancer. It's cancer of the mind. And I'm like, well, number one, we know that the rates of suicide do not drop after these children undergo these surgeries.
Yeah.
There's no evidence to support that this is a cure. With cancer, we know that if you remove the breast, cancer will not form in that part of the body. If the problem is in your mind, then mutilating your body will not solve the issue. We have to fix your mind. You are admitting then that there is a psychological problem at play. And so it's super fascinating that their solution to a psychological problem is to accept the person's delusion and then to allow them to mutilate their body. And what if the delusion is, I don't believe I should have arms? What if that's the delusion? Should doctors start cutting off people's arms? Because there is an actual mental illness that causes people to believe that they have limbs they shouldn't have. And so it is virtually identical, by the way. There's no difference whatsoever between saying, I'm actually probably safer to cut off your arm than it is to undergo a full sex change. So we don't play that game with anything else other than what suits them politically and ideologically.
Well, and to your point, you know, the other piece of this, as you said, there is no evidence that this actually changes that. And that's one of the reasons why these detransitioners are detransitioning, because they come to the realization that what they did hasn't addressed the issue. The issue was underlying. And you and I had some great conversation about those underlying issues the last time that you were on. I mean, at the end of the day, the underlying issue really is who's giving you your value, who's giving you your identity, who's telling you why you matter and how important you are. And I think that, you know, this goes back to the church and the Christian message and perhaps some of the ways in which we're failing to get that message across.
Well, grossly failing. I mean, even within religious communities this message has permeated, out of the idea of acceptance. So I think there's two things at play. I think the denial of God has just become, and secularist, morally relative society has just kind of become more abundant. But I also believe that people are very complacent, and they believe they're taking a position of empathy by saying, oh, I totally feel bad. I understand. I'm going to listen to you. I'm going to accept you. When that allows a vicious point of view to take hold in society. I mean, I feel it too. It's hard to sit there in front of someone who's very argumentative, whose entire identity revolves around fighting for this thing, and tell them, look, I disagree with you. It's okay to put that into the world. You shouldn't compromise your values. You should always stay on the side of truth. You should never compromise what you believe because you're trying to accommodate someone else. And that's become very common in Christianity, I feel. I even see it with abortion. I see Christians, you know, justifying abortion. I'm like, you cannot simultaneously tell me you believe in God and you are a Christian and that you want to have a conversation about how abortion is okay. The two are non-existent in the same realm, because it's a direct contradiction. And the same thing here with the value of human life. It's a direct connection to that too.
I think the issue comes to, you know, because the argument of, well, I'm fighting for my right to do this, that really, honestly, is surface. Mm-hmm. Because the real issue is why? Why do you, what is it that has you convinced that is your reality? What is it that has you convinced that doing this, and maybe even the better question is have all of your issues that you had previously, have they gone away, or have you shifted them now and just kind of you're ignoring them while you fight this fight, and that has become your existence, that's become your life,
entire identity.
Yeah,
well, that is, again, it's exactly what we spoke about last time. It's people need to create these superficial identities, these material identities, because they have no actual belief in something greater than the material. So if you don't have a belief in something greater than the material, you will latch onto it for your value, as opposed to something greater than yourself. And when you have something that by birth, by just existence, lets you believe that you have value, that you are special and you are unique, it does two things. The first thing it does is it allows yourself to have value, right? You look at yourself and you go, okay, I don't need to create these superficial identities. My identity is greater than anything in this world. And you see a lot of athletes, a lot of people, they suffer from this. When their career ends, their entire identity was just, I was this great athlete. Now what am I? I can't do it anymore. Or someone beautiful who ages and loses their looks. Their entire identity was in that singular thing. It's not so far off from what we're talking about. But the other thing it does is it allows you to see other people as inherently unique and special. And so you stop being able to cause harm to other people. You live an automatically, inherently ethical lifestyle. Because if people are truly unique, if they have such value beyond the material, if they're created by God and they're special, then how could you hurt that in the same way that you can't hurt yourself anymore? And so it's infectious. And I think that's the beauty that's completely lost. And it's why we see people now, they're willing to cause harm because never mind, they cannot see another person as valuable in the same way as someone who truly believes in something greater than themselves. But they also latch onto any ideology that gives them value so strongly that it doesn't matter if they cause harm to other people, so long as they are fulfilling that kind of religious principle for their ideology, which is a religion of COVID, a religion of transgender, a religion of hierarchy of identity politics, of wokeism. That is their religion now. So if their religion tells them it's okay to go out and preach this, it's okay to brainwash kids, it's okay to mutilate children, they will live that to the fullest. That's where their entire value system stems from.
And that, of course, then becomes the danger to these innocent kids. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, on one hand, you have what you're referring to, and those might be called, you know, true believers in what, I mean, they've been inundated and brainwashed to be a believer in what it is they're saying. They believe that's the answer. And then you have individuals that are using that, I believe, in order to A, either victimize these children or to break down and destroy our society and our culture to a point where they can then use that as a method of control, as a method of at which you alluded to when you talked about, you know, medical issues like the vaccine, for example, or, you know, or what happened in COVID, where they, you know, shut churches down, shut businesses down, you know, stopped productions. They ended everything. Did I lose you? I think you froze for a second. So, So I mean, you know, there are a number of ways in which they are using this ideology as a tool or as a weapon to try to gain control, I think, over our nation.
So psychogenic epidemics, or what you would call mass psychosis, which is the belief in anything that's clearly objectively not true. Those are beneficial to small groups of the population who want to take control of the population, because you need certain things in place for a psychogenic epidemic to happen. Number one, fear. Fear is one of the primary tools, because what happens when people are in a state of fear, and again, it's very hard to get people into this state if they have religion. So that's another interesting point. It's very, very hard to, it's one of the reasons why Marxism has to have you believe in the state above all else. You can't have a belief in God. The belief in God will overpower the belief in the state. So one of the things these people have to do is destroy that, but then they have to create a fear state, because it's very easy to get people scared at that point. And when people are in a state of fear, they will do anything. They will turn to anyone to get rid of that feeling. And so what we had during COVID, and what we have with the trans movement, and what we have with a lot of these kind of progressive, hyper-progressive movements, are mechanisms to push fear so that they can gain control, so that you turn to them for the answers and you accept whatever answer they give. One of the byproducts of a psychogenic epidemic is usually some kind of violence toward a segment of the population. Right, you look at the Holocaust, that's a psychogenic epidemic. Hitler managed to convince it, and you don't need a huge percentage of the population, but enough of the population to believe that Jews were a threat. Salem witch trials, people believe that women could be witches. And what happens is people in power can take advantage of you because you're so distracted, you're so fixated on that, that they can make whatever changes they want in society so long as you are fixated on that problem. And that they can always offer you a solution to that problem, which will always be a scapegoat.
I would suggest that was one of the reasons why our Puritans and our pilgrims came to America, right? Is because the King of England used the church in the same manner. So you can take, again, you can take something that would seem to be good and then misuse it or abuse it. We have a fear of God. We have a fear of the Lord, but there's a healthy aspect of that in the same way, right? You know, a child has a healthy fear of their mom or their dad in the sense that they're going to do what mom or dad are trying to get them to do, under the understanding that when dad says, don't go play in the street, there's a good reason for dad to say, don't go play in the street, because you might get run over by a truck. Okay. When God gives us this, that we don't check out our thought process. There's a logical understanding. When God pulled the Israelites out and created the nation under Abram to begin with, and then the laws under Moses, but all of that, the Exodus and Deuteronomy, was all about saying, look, all of these nations around you, the way in which they do what they do ultimately is what is causing them to implode. So let me show you how I intended for you to live. And if you'll live like this, you'll be healthy. The people around you will be healthy. You'll build healthy communities. And this is going to be to your benefit. Again, understanding that ultimately everything God does is good.
I mean, I'm very, you know, like the other day I was just, I went on TikTok. I don't use TikTok. I just wanted to scroll through it and see what I'm exposed to on there. And it's really disheartening to kind of see what is happening in society. It's really scary. Like, we're a society that's become so hungry for views and for attention, and we're narcissistic. And you look at what's perpetuated, you would think that if there was a platform to share unlimited knowledge and information, that the best would be brought forth. But it's not. It's the exact opposite. It's the decay of society. You look at social media, you look at what's happening in schools, you look at what we're telling kids, there's an absolute decay of any ethical, moral standard or raising up the best or creating good examples. All of that is gone. I don't see, and I mean this, I do not see how our society can continue to exist if it continues going down this path. And I don't mean in 100 years. I mean, something bad is coming soon if we don't course correct. It's almost like you think of like the age of debauchery, and it seems like we are in our age of debauchery where we've normalized unhealthy sexual relations. We've normalized the complete deconstruction of absolute truth and denial of gender. We've normalized bringing the worst in society to the top and celebrating them. It's just everything is backwards. And I say this as a person who grew up very nihilistic, you know, was a strong believer in just we live in a chaotic universe. And just seeing what's happening has kind of made me realize how insane that point of view is. Just the world cannot exist with that mindset, which is the mindset that most people are adopting now.
Well, you know, I would, and we're coming to the end of our time, but I would suggest it's 2 Timothy chapter 3, right? Perilous days, in the last days, perilous times shall come. Men will be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying the power thereof, and from such turn away. I don't think there's anything on that list that doesn't apply to what we're dealing with right now.
1,000,000% accurate. 1,000,000% accurate.
And
shocking how accurate it
is. Isn't it, though? Isn't it, though? And you know, and this was written, you know, 2,000 years ago. So, you know, it's really, I mean, I think it is a tremendous overview. And then, you know, one of the things that it does, and Aaron Russo, we'll talk about this, you and I, on another time, but Aaron Russo did an interview with Alex Jones a number of years ago, talking about how the feminist movement was in fact something that was run by the CIA. It was an operation in part run by the CIA in order to destroy the family, because the Marxists knew that in order to be able to take over the family, they had to get mom out of the house. They had to pull her away from the kids so that the kids were left defenseless so that they could come into the house. And when you look at it, you know, one of the things that it says after it talks about denying the power, it says, "For of this sort are they which creep into houses and lead captive silly women laden with sins, led away with diverse lusts." One of the big things that's happening now is that women are being told, "Hey, you know, guys have been sleeping around for centuries. You ought to do the same."
Mm-hmm.
You ought to act like an immoral man and sleep with as many guys as you can, and friend sex is the new craze.
Yeah. And it's destroyed women's happiness. There's studies on it. There's numerous studies. Did you know women who have a ton of promiscuous sex are unable to form similar bonds to women who don't? Because what's the chemical called? There's a chemical release in the brain. They stop producing it. They stop producing the bonding chemical, which, by the way, is the same bonding chemical they have with a baby. which is why a lot of parents nowadays, a lot of women nowadays are disconnected from their own kids. We've even pushed that message, by the way. There's a lot of messages of like, oh, I hate my kid. I'm tired of my kid. And people are like celebrating. Thank you for being honest, finally. It's like, I'm sorry. There's something wrong with you. Your kid can annoy you. Your kid can drive you crazy. But they should still be the most important thing in your life.
Amen.
The fact that we're celebrating this new TikTok trend to break eggs on your kid's head. Did you see it?
No.
And the kids cry.
Oh, my God.
So there's this TikTok trend now where the parent is cracking an egg on the kid's head, like hard, like smashing it into their head.
Yeah.
And then not enough to like cause a bruise or anything, but enough to hurt the child. Like the kids go, ow, or like start crying. And then the parent laughs and like looks at the camera for views. Wow. I mean, there is a complete inversion of any type of morals.
All right, I got to get you back on. We need to talk more about this issue and the breakdown in the family, because I think it's really important. And also, I think it's important because you come from, you know, I'm an old guy. You come from a younger generation where, you know, where that has been something that your generation was soaked in, if you will. And indoctrinated in. I look at something like that from my generation and I'm like, that's crazy. That's insanity. But in a younger generation, it's like, well, no, because, you know, and I'll be honest, our generation is responsible to a degree because those who made it about them in our generation taught your generation to make it about you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the danger. All right, we're out of time. We're over time, but that's okay. This was good stuff. Elon, thanks so much for being with me today. As always, safe travels to you, my dear friend. It's always a pleasure to have you. ElonSRU.com, by the way. Be sure and check it out. And get over to eGuard, E-G-A-R-D, eGuard Watches. They really are. They're just a unique timepiece, and I encourage you to check them out. All right, we're going to take our break. We'll be back right after this brief break.
We could talk for hours.